So the title of this talk is What the Liberated Mind Knows. I'd like to start with a story from my childhood. I was born and grew up in a kibbutz. And as some of you probably know, the children, we didn't live with our parents. We had a children's house, and we all stayed in the children's house. And the parents at night would come with us, put us to bed, tell us a story, kiss us goodnight, and go home. And we would stay there, sleep there. And there would be one person, Shomeret Laila, if you're familiar with, a woman, a watch. How would you say it in English?
Guard, watch.
A woman who would be usually a woman in her young 20s or so. Usually someone who doesn't have children herself. She's just, it's her toranut, you know, it's her turn. She was assigned in the kibbutz to do a week of watching the children at night. And she would be sitting on the porch in the summer. And if she would hear a cry somewhere, she would take a walk between all the buildings and find out who's crying. So I was about, I think, 6 or 7 year old, and I was quite a naughty girl, Yelda Shovava. I liked to do some all kinds of mischiefs. And that particular night, I had a very good friend of mine, a little boy. We were sharing a room, very similar to what you're doing here. And we used to do all kinds of balagan, sameach, at night. So this particular night, the woman, the watch, was sitting on the porch, and there was a little kitchenette, and there was a little window between the kitchenette and the porch where she was sitting. So this boy and I, we snuck out of our beds, and through that little window, we started throwing bread at the woman. And we did it a couple of times until she came running after us. And so we fled and ran away to our room, but very cleverly. And since I remember that, I know that 6-year-old can be very clever. Very cleverly, we didn't run to his or her bed. We ran into the opposite bed. I ran to his bed, and he ran to my bed. And the woman came charging in, very angry, and told us to be quiet, to turn our head to the wall. You know this sentence probably. Turn your head to the wall and go to sleep. I was laughing so hard. I peed in my pants, in my pajamas. And so so when that happened, I was a little bit embarrassed, and I didn't want to wet my friend's bed. So all I wanted was to go back to my bed and, okay, go to sleep and call the night. But the woman would not let us change beds. Why? Because she couldn't imagine, and she couldn't believe that we wouldn't run into our own beds. She thought we were pulling her legs now, now that we say, no, okay, enough, we'll go to our own beds. She wouldn't believe us. She said, no, stay in your bed, which made me realize again when I was 6 years old that the grown-ups are very strange creatures, very illogical. But what was interesting about that event was that this woman would not believe the truth that was right in front of her. And why couldn't she accept the truth? The truth that this was not my bed. I was peeing in my friend's bed, not in my own. She couldn't accept the truth. The truth was right in front of her. And why couldn't she accept the truth? Because it didn't match with her notion, with her ideas about the truth. It didn't fit with her understanding of what children at the age of 6 are capable of. And so much of the time, we are very much the same. The truth is right in front of us, but it doesn't match up with our concept of what the truth is, with our ideologies. Christopher mentioned yesterday, anything that ends with ism, all our isms in our lives, very, very, very strong blinder ideology. I used to be a very ideological person. Still struggling with it. Very much a blinder to the truth. What we think is right, so many times blinds us to what is. And I say reality, and rather than saying the truth, because truth is a very complex or charged notion for many of us. The truth, well, my truth, your truth, this is what I think is the truth, is true, and then you may think, no, this is. And then we can just start arguing, what is the truth? So I prefer to use the word reality, because about the truth we can argue, but reality, this is reality, this is what is. No one can argue with reality, right? Right? Well, wrong. We argue with reality all the time. Whenever, what does it mean we argue with reality? When it rains outside and we say it shouldn't be raining, it's ruining my weekend's plans. When we say it should be raining, it's at the end of the winter now and this country needs water. It should be raining, but it's not. We are arguing with reality. Sometimes when we're sick, when our health, we're not in good health as we would like to be, and we don't like it. We want it to be different. Perhaps we had some real crises in our lives. Iran spoke yesterday of being with a friend who was taking his last breath on this earth. And it came up in one of the groups today. How can it be that young people die before they reach an old age? This is not right. But this is reality. Maybe we love someone and this person used to love us, but they no longer love us. Maybe we got fired from work and we think this shouldn't be this way. And even here in our meditation practice, from what I heard so far in the groups, it seems there's one thing in common for most of us. No matter what we experience, whether it's a lot of sleepiness, whether it's a lot of restlessness, whether it's boredom, we don't like it. Whatever it is, we perhaps would prefer our neighbor's experience. And then we sit with our neighbor in the group and we hear the neighbor is not satisfied and is not happy with his or her experience either. So many thoughts. I came here to meditate. I shouldn't have all these thoughts. This shouldn't be. this feeling. I shouldn't have this feeling, whatever the feeling is. I'm tired. I have a sexual fantasy. Ooh, everybody is so spiritual. I'm the only one who has these thoughts. Maybe I'm angry. Anger arises. I didn't come here to... I can be angry at home. This is not what I came here for. Sleepiness arises and comes to visit us. Boredom comes to visit. Maybe we wonder whether or not we should even be here. Is this the right time for us to be here? Iran is keeping mentioning the Kinneret. It sounds better and better idea all the time. The Sea of Galilee. Anytime we have the thought, this should not be this way, we are arguing with reality. And how can we make friends with reality, with what is? The Buddha said, things are not as they seem to be, nor are they otherwise. Well, where does that leave us? How can we know reality? To start investigate reality, to start looking into the nature of reality, to start coming into relationship with reality, we need to first, as a starting point, first stop arguing with it, making friends with it. At one point in my life, I lived for a few years with my teacher. It was a guru. We had a little community, spiritual community of disciples, about 300 people. And we practiced sadhana, yoga and meditation, seva, selfless service, brahmacharya, celibacy, prishut, minit, and bhakti, devotion. And I'd like to share with you some quotes of what this teacher had to say about reality. Reality has no commitment to follow our guidance. Until we recognize reality, we will be frustrated, we will suffer. Life is a perpetual adjustment to what is. God is direct experience of reality. Positivity is distorting reality just as negativity. All experiences of pain and pleasure are not aligned with reality. They are, it's a position we take. I'll read it again. All experiences of pain and pleasure are not aligned with reality. It's a position we take. The truth is the absence of dreams, of anticipation, of for and against. In choiceless awareness, we are in complete synchronicity with reality, and that's meditation. So reality, as he says, doesn't take cues from us how to be. It doesn't follow our likes and dislikes. It's not bad and it's not good. It is devoid of, it doesn't have any attributes inherent in it. It just is. And we have the choice to position ourselves to it. Sounds easy, but it goes against our habits, our tendencies. Christopher mentioned Krishna yesterday, and the talk of between Krishna and his friend Arjuna, his disciple, really, Arjuna. And at one point in that talk, Arjuna asks Krishna to show him his real form. And Krishna says, "Well, buddy, I'm not sure you can take it." And Arjuna says, "Please, please, I'd like to." So Krishna opens his mouth and Arjuna looks inside and he sees the whole universe, or maybe many, many universes. And the sight is so overwhelming, is so frightening, really, to him, that Arjuna says, "Stop, stop, I can't take it. Please go back to your normal form." Reality sometimes can be overwhelming to us. And we say, "No, no, I want back my dreams. I want back my concept of reality. I feel so much more comfortable there." So what does the liberated mind know? I find it very appropriate to be talking about liberated mind and liberation. Now it's Passover, it's Pesach. And we all know the story. It's about the Israelites leaving Egypt, coming out of slavery into freedom. So it's very appropriate that we'll be sitting here reflecting on and inquiring into the nature of freedom, of slavery. And what is freedom? What is slavery? Is the meaning of freedom to act on every urge I have? To fulfill every desire? Perhaps not to be controlled by others? To realize my potential? Maybe that's freedom. To do what I want when I want it, to be what I want, to acquire what I want to acquire, is that freedom? What is freedom? And what is the meaning of slavery? Why God kept the Israelites in Sinai for 40 years? We all know, I mean, it takes what, a week, maybe a month to cross it? 40 years.
Yehudim.
Well, I imagine you know the answer. God said to the Israelites who came out of Egypt, he said, "You are not fit to be free, to have to come to the promised land, because you have a slave mentality. You will be stuck in this desert until the whole generation that was born into slavery dies, and only when a generation that was born into freedom comes, that generation will reach the promised land." So slavery is not just working hard when someone else tells me what to do. There's a slave mentality, as God was pointing out to the Israelites. And what is slavery for us today? In this day and age, what are the pharaohs, paro'im, that we encounter today? What are the inner pharaohs that we encounter? What tyranny runs us today? and from what bondage today we are trying to be liberated. I think this is a very relevant theme for this retreat, to ponder, to reflect on. Also, perhaps as the retreat progresses, it's also good to remember another story. I don't think it's from the Bible, I think it's from later scriptures, but I'm sure you'll know it. When the Israelites crossed the Red Sea and the Red Sea parted and they all came to the other side in safety, the Egyptians' army and all their horses were coming after them into the Red Sea, and the Red Sea that parted for the Israelites closed on them and they all drowned. And the Israelites were saved and they're dancing and singing. And then God said to the Israelites, You know what he said?
Ma'aseh yadai tov'im bayam v'atem omrim shira.
Bidiyuk. Ma'aseh yadai tov'im bayam v'atem omrim shira. My own creation is drowning. How can you be singing? This is, to me, such a beautiful, such a non-dual statement, really. I mean, here they are drowning because of God's miracle. I mean, he parted, or she parted, the Red Sea for the Israelites. He or she made the Egyptians drown. And then he's saying, you know, how can you be singing? My own creation is drowning. And the reason I find it so very relevant to our retreat is when we, as the days progress, we may encounter some of our own inner Egyptians, some parts that we don't like, some perhaps what's called in the psychology language dark sides, the shadow. And perhaps we can remember God's compassionate and loving words. Even as he was or she was making them drown, God loved them still. God had compassion for them. So maybe we can offer the same compassion to those parts that we may see and that we may not like very much. That we can remember these two are God's creation. And what might be some of the inner pharaohs, the paro, apnimi, the inner parts that may control us, may imprison us? Perhaps our habits. As I was mentioning the other day about sugar for myself, each one of us has probably a list. Some of them we recognize, some of them we only begin to recognize when we change something in our life and all of a sudden we realize, for instance, coming here, perhaps we realize it was really important for me to have this morning coffee or to take the morning shower. Some of the habitual way of thinking, perhaps, imprisons us. Perhaps we have some internalized voices from perhaps our parents or society that we heard over the years, and we internalized a voice of a judge. Our fears, our desires, our attachments. Christopher mentioned yesterday devotion. Sometimes I feel our deepest devotion and our strongest dedication is to our self-image. how other people see us and what they think of us and what they think of the choices we make in life. Some of us can be 30 or 40 or 50 and we still worry what our parents think of our choices in life. Our parents may be even dead and we still worry, but the things we cling to, the things that we cling to the most, the things we cling to the most because we believe they'll bring us happiness the most happiness, are the very things that cause us the most suffering. So what does the liberated mind know? The liberated mind knows nothing is worth clinging to as me or mine. And we've been talking here about the me, the self. And what exactly do we mean when we say that? Let's examine it here together. What is this me? What is this I? Perhaps some of us had the experience of not being able sometimes in our lives to fall asleep at night. And we lie in bed awake and we wonder, what's this life all about? Yeah. And who and what am I? And we may be lying in a million-dollar bed, or we may be in a hut in Sinai. We may be a million-dollar person. It's still, the question remains the same. Whatever position we have in life, what's life about? And what or who am I? The first thing that usually we are, the first title, but the first identity that we are assigned in this life is usually when we come out, when we are born, and it's, well, it's a boy or it's a girl. Nowadays, you know, there's the ultrasound, we don't wait for that moment. We know ahead of time whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. And it's interesting, though, just a side comment, that we don't say, oh, it's a human, because I guess you don't have to state the obvious. So if there was a chance that it would be, I don't know, a puppy, or a... or, oh, look, you had, congratulations, you had a little dolphin, then we would say, oh, you know, it's a human, but... We're not that advanced yet, so we stick to our own species. So, a man or a woman, this is a very basic identity that we have. And then we collect identities through our years. Maybe right here we have Israelis, we have English, some are Jewish. Some are not, gay, straight. In fact, I was very privileged to be in a very courageous event just last week. I was at a conference of lesbian Palestinians, and these very brave women decided to come out of, not just out of the closet, but out of this, a very restricted society, and voice their voice and share experiences and offer support to others, and risking their lives doing that, really. So right there, there were, let's see how many identities. Women, Palestinians, feminists, and lesbians. And some were what we call disabled. So sometimes it's important for us to cling or to hold on to an identity. Usually it seems that the more groups that are oppressed in society tend to hold on to that particular identity more strongly. But don't we all, really? Through the years, we acquired some different titles. Some people here, for instance, we are different kind of professions. Some of us are, there's a baker here, an architect, some are teachers, computer techies, social workers, businessmen and women. But where are they right now? Where is the yoga teacher right now? Where is the healer right now? Some of us are brothers and sisters. We have all of us are either a son or a daughter because we had to come to this world through someone. But where is that son or daughter right now? Some of us are parents. Now that's a hard one. So breathe. Where is the parent right now? Where is the father right now? Where is the mother at this moment? And right now I'm sitting here as a Dharma teacher, but just 20 minutes ago I was walking outside with you all on the grass. I took my socks off and such a lovely feeling. I recommend to everybody who hasn't done it yet to walk barefoot on the grass. What a lovely sensation. So there I was, step, thoughts. Oh, where am I? Yes, step. Where was the Dharma teacher? And right now, let's look at what's happening right now. Well, there's this large room, about 100 people sitting in it. Some are sitting on the floor, some are sitting on chairs. One is sitting on a bed. Most everybody is silent. One person is uttering sounds. A, E, I, U. These sounds are received by a hearing faculty, the ears, and it forms, these sounds form words that hopefully makes sense. So what's happening right now? Well, there's talking and there's hearing. Where is the Dharma teacher right now? And where is the meditation practitioner right now? Well, if I'm not all the things that I think I am, then what does it leave me with? What or who am I then? If I'm not all these things, all these titles and identities that until this moment I thought formed me and made me distinguish different from others. then what am I without all these? I'd like us to take a moment to just be with that question, without trying to answer it right away. And if a ready-made answer pops up in the head, let it go for a moment. Especially if it's a Buddhist one. Like, I'm a process of aggregates and some scars arising and passing away according to cause and condition. Let it go. And if the mind is frantically trying to come up with an answer or to figure it out, perhaps we can turn our attention from the mind to the heart and just be with this question. And when I say let's be with the question, I don't mean let's think about it. I mean let's be open to it. Because whatever we think it is not. And whatever we think we are not. So let's just close our eyes, just as we are. We don't have to change position. And just let this question rest in our hearts, without trying to answer it. Just to be with it, very, very gently.